You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the powerful homosexual activist movement. I've been doing that for about 20 years. It's a sort of a lonely struggle. But we had a great victory on Tuesday that we're going to be talking about, holding back the Democrats' attempt to force homosexuality on the military, open homosexuality. And we'll be talking to Colonel Richard Black, who is a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, but also has a heroic biography in service to our nation. Colonel Black, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good to be here, Peter.
Well, Colonel, thank you so much, first of all, for your service to our country and all you've done. I'm going to read from some of your bio, but it's an honor to have you here and an amazing story your life is. But currently you serve, and you've served since 1998 in the Virginia House of Delegates. And are you shooting for higher office, Colonel?
I'm not currently in office. I was in office from 1998 to 2006.
Oh, okay, 2006. And now you are running for the state Senate?
That's correct.
Okay, and when will that election be?
That'll be in 2011.
Well, we're a nonpartisan organization, Colonel, so I can't advocate for your election, but I can say that you're a great man. And I used to live in Virginia. I used to work for the Washington Times and various pro-family organizations such as CWA and FRC right there in the Beltway. And I know that you had a great reputation as a principled conservative.
I have to interject and tell you that you had a tremendous reputation, still very much have a tremendous reputation for your defense of the moral fabric of this nation, and I applaud you for that.
Well, thank you, Colonel, and you're involved in that battle now, but I'm going to read some of your bio here because this is incredible, and I'm going to have to digress from the homosexuality issue for a while because I want to ask you about some of your war experience and what you've accomplished in your life. I'm reading from Colonel Dick Black's biography. He is a retired colonel. Colonel Dick Black was elected to the Virginia House of Delegates in 1998. He was the only combat-wounded veteran in the Virginia General Assembly. Dick Black enlisted in the Marines in 1963. He graduated from Parris Island as its top rifle marksman. Then he went on to flight training school at Pensacola and became one of the Marines' youngest career-qualified pilots. Dick Black flew 269 combat helicopter missions in Vietnam. His helicopter was hit by enemy ground fire on four separate missions. Serving on the ground with the 1st Marine Regiment, Black directed hundreds of airstrikes in Vietnam. He served he delivered many tons of bombs and napalm on enemy positions while engaged in bitter ground fighting, defending the ridgeline at Nhu Lac Son. You received the Purple Heart Medal, amongst other medals, for wounds received during a rubber boat assault against enemy positions across the Hoi An River. His radio man died beside him during that attack. So, Colonel, you know, lots of people have seen the movies, but you actually lived this.
Well, I had the great fortune to serve with the 1st Marine Regiment and also with a wonderful helicopter squadron called the Ugly Angels, and we were quite a fine combat outfit, and the men who served in both of those units were awarded the Presidential Unit Citation for having accomplished a good deal in combat.
Yeah, and let me read toward the last paragraph of your bio. It said, Colonel Black's military awards include the Purple Heart Medal, 3 Legion of Merit, 13 Air Medals, 2 Presidential Unit Citations, the Army General Staff Badge, and Naval Aviator's Wings of Gold. And I want to read another paragraph which describes really why he's the ideal person to talk about the issue of homosexuality in the military. It says later Colonel Black was Dick Black was commissioned a major in the Army JAG Corps. That's the Judge Advocate General's Corps. He became the chief prosecutor for 3 Corps at Fort Hood, Texas. He subsequently served as staff judge advocate in 3 assignments, supervising several major law offices with 25 to 40 attorneys. He was responsible for criminal prosecutions, federal litigation, and more. Colonel Black's final assignment was as chief of the Pentagon's Army Criminal Law Division. He developed executive orders for the president's signature and laws that were enacted by Congress. He testified several times before the U.S. Congress. So you've been, you know, you were behind a desk, you were out in the field and behind a desk. Tell me your, first of all, Colonel, this issue of homosexuality in the military, why is this so important?
Well, you know, there's a long history that the Democrats have of engaging in very disastrous, very radical social experimentation with the military. It doesn't begin with the gays in the military. Back in 1946, under President Truman, they set up this Doolittle Commission on officer and enlisted relations, and that the results of that commission were a breakdown of the rank structure that was so severe that we had just come out of fighting Nazi Germany and Japan. And suddenly we were thrown into battle with North Korea, a little nation that most Americans had never heard of, and were just nearly driven into the sea by this third world country. So that was in 46. Of course, the results of it didn't take place until the Korean War, 51 to 53. But another instance, which some of your listeners may recall, is that Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara relaxed the drug and alcohol policies in the military when Johnson was president. And they also set up this Project 100,000 during Vietnam. And Project 100,000 put criminals and men with very, very low intelligence quotas in uniform. And it created such a collapse of discipline that I recall shortly after I left the Marines that the armed guards at Camp Lejeune on the base had to patrol in pairs to defend against roving mobs of Project 100,000 Marines. And it wasn't until Ronald Reagan was elected president in 81 that we began the struggle to restore discipline. And, of course, he shaped things up pretty quickly. He was a very fine man.
Yeah, Colonel, and can I ask you about one other situation of since you had such Vietnam experience, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Democrats led the pull after we pulled out of Vietnam. The Democrats then defunded the South Vietnamese war effort, which led to the overrun of Vietnam and ultimately the boat people. Is that accurate?
That is precisely accurate, and it's a very little known fact. We really, for all practical purposes, had won the Vietnam War, and then Democrats managed to overthrow President Nixon with the Watergate affair, and one of their very first actions was to cut off ammunition and supplies to the South Vietnamese, who were fighting heroically and who were effectively defending free Vietnam against the communist invasion from the north. I spoke with some of the South Vietnamese. I remember one fellow telling me he was a tanker, and they were forced to ration the tanks to where they would give him a single shell and 8 gallons of fuel for each tank. Now, those tanks burn up fuel at a horrific pace, and you can't do much with one shell. And I think the Democrats sent a very quick message to Vietnam saying, hey, look, there's no use in fighting because the Democrats have cut off your supplies. The war is over.
That's it, Colonel. It's despicable what we did. And I think if there are any members of that contingent in the House of Representatives or in the Congress that were part of that cutoff, I think they shouldn't be serving today. It's just absolutely an outrage. We didn't just pull out. We cut the legs right from under them, and that led to a horrendous that can also be linked to Pol Pot, can't it? Because the fall of South Vietnam contributed to the genocide in Cambodia.
Absolutely. Now, we don't know how many people were slaughtered in South Vietnam because there was just a total blackout on information coming from there. I happen to have family friends who had a relative who was executed for just being a captain in the South Vietnamese military. But in over the border in Cambodia, we did get information, and I think the best estimates were about 5 million people were killed, and they were killed for reasons such as if you wore eyeglasses, it was presumed that you may have been a reader, and if you could read books, they killed you. I mean, it was just one of the most brutal slaughters in all history. That was a direct result of the Democrat-led cutoff of funds for the South Vietnamese. Millions of people died from that.
So we have a history here, and even though we celebrated a victory on Tuesday, the stopping the push for open homosexuality in the military, it's sad that only two Democratic senators voted with the Republicans on that issue. Just two senators from Arkansas. It's a sad day when we've got two Democrats standing up for our military and the entire Senate. I'm Peter LaBarbera. I'm interviewing Colonel Dick Black, who is a former Marine from Virginia. We'll be back with Colonel Black in a minute. Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera with Americans for Truth. We're interviewing Colonel Dick Black, who is running for office for State Senate in Virginia. Colonel Black is a war hero. He has a distinguished career as a Marine pilot and an Army JAG colonel. He fought in some of the bloodiest engagements in the Vietnam War, including two battles where Marines won the Medal of Honor. And Colonel, I have to ask you, as somebody who never fought, and it's one of my regrets, never having been in the services, how can you describe seeing men, being in the battlefield with your fighting men and, your fellow soldiers dying right beside you? Is it hard to describe that even?
Well, it's, you are disciplined, and the essence of the military is discipline. I went through training at Parris Island, South Carolina, as a private. It was extremely harsh back in the days when I went there, but people came out very hardened and prepared for battle, and they fought with great heroism on the rice paddies of Vietnam, and you simply do your job. You do what has to be done, and you focus on getting the mission done. And if the man falls beside you, you do what you can for him. And if you can't do anything, you move on and you continue the fight, because you really just don't have the opportunity to sit around and get emotional about things. You got to move on.
And the military is not a civil rights zone, is it? You hear a lot of talk about rights, and it's unbelievable. The military is not somewhere where we focus on our rights.
It is remarkable the number of battles that are determined by the actions of a single individual, and where a unit clings to life by a thread. And that's why this gays in the military thing is such a big thing. The homosexual sort of touted as being sort of a jobs program for gay activists, that they have a right to serve, and they're gonna help the country because they'll plus up the numbers and this kind of thing. But when you get on the battlefield, if you have one individual who fails, the whole unit may die. And that's why, discipline is important. You, And again, the Democrats, the gays in the military is not the first such instance. They had the Project 100,000. They had the relaxation of drug policies. They had the equalization of the rank structure so that you'd have fraternization. Every one of these policies has caused deaths on the battlefield. And the gays in the military has not yet, but it will certainly do so if we adopt it.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about HIV. I mean, you've got you will definitely, if you open up the military to open homosexuals, you will have certainly more soldiers and servicemen who are HIV positive. I think the number already is something like 19,000 HIV positive soldiers in the military. Now, that can come right down to giving blood. I mean, those soldiers should not give blood. But what would be the effect of that? I mean, it's just another aspect to this whole equation.
Well, keep in mind, here's the way it's handled, and this has been for a long time. A soldier who is HIV positive is not discharged for that reason. He remains on active duty, but he is not deployable. What that means is that he remains in the States, and his buddies who are not engaged in homosexual activities and so forth, they have to serve more time in the combat zone because you have HIV-positive soldiers who are in plushy assignments back in the States.
But Colonel, the fact that there are all these soldiers that are HIV-positive is evidence that the don't ask, don't tell plan is a failure. I mean, why are all these homosexually engaging, practicing soldiers serving in the first place? They're obviously engaging. They're engaging in homosexuality despite the law.
Sure. Well, it's part of this whole myth that that coming up HIV positive is not evidence that you engaged in homosexual activity. Now, it's true. You can become HIV positive through intravenous drug use, through relations with prostitutes, and so forth. But if the regulations operated properly, people would be discharged because they're simply not prepared for service if they're HIV positive. But it's become such an area of political correctness, and there's so much political power among the homosexual activists that they have managed to carve out this area where there are many HIV positives non-deployable. These are not people who serve their nation in battle. They're people who take the rear echelon assignments, forcing other soldiers to take their place on the battlefield.
Interesting. Now, why don't you talk about, make the case against homosexuality in the military. Why is this important to combat readiness, to morale, to what about the privacy rights of soldiers? You know, the tight bunking situations and showers, this is sort of ridiculed by the gay activists, but it's certainly a factor. Talk about that.
Well, the thing is that, the military environment it's not like living in a Motel 6. You're out on the battlefield. In Vietnam, for the most part, I constructed my own living quarters with a spade, with an entrenching tool. I lived in foxholes. I lived in sandbag bunkers. There was only a single day in the entire time in Vietnam where I saw a regular toilet. We used to climb down the ridge line at Nui Loxon, which is a very sheer, steep mountain, and we would stand under a small waterfall. They'd put out about the water that you'd get if you poured from a bucket, and we'd have one man on watch with a machine gun overhead, and then there'd be several of us standing there naked, washing down under this shower, as Vietnamese farmers would walk on by. You just did what you had to do. Now, this idea that somehow we can handle these problems because we'll set up little little compartments where people have privacy and give them little robes and things like that. That is not combat. That is not the military. It's not battle. And so you have all of these gay activists who convince people who've never served in battle whatsoever that that the military is no different than, you know, living on DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C. It's not the same.
Wouldn't it require gay barracks? You'd almost have to have gay barracks. How could you maintain the privacy rights of? I mean, we don't have male soldiers bunking with female soldiers.
Well, I think that's correct, and that really is the essence of the problem. You would not have any practical means of separating homosexual men from other men. And I recall one particularly terrible situation where this was in basic training. There was a young fellow who went to the showers at night, and there were two homosexuals lurking in. They were also basic trainees, and they strangled him with a towel and forced him to submit to, you know, things that we won't talk about on the air. But it was extremely brutal. It was extremely humiliating, and they taunted him when they were finished. And at the time of the court-martial of these guys, the victim was in psychiatric confinement at a hospital. Now, this is what we're asking the mothers and fathers of America to send their children into, is that sort of environment where sexual bullies will prey on the smallest and least assertive soldiers. Not every soldier is a John Wayne. Some of them are just regular guys. Some of them are not real big guys or strong or aggressive, but they're good soldiers. And what we're saying is, look, if your son is not big, aggressive, mean, and strong, keep him out of the military because he's going to be victimized by these homosexual predators that will be unleashed by the administration's policy on gays in the military.
Well, there certainly will be a more confident homosexual, more confident about his, quote, sexuality. That certainly would be a result of these policies, which are basically saying we approve of homosexuality. That's what this would do.
Well, this is true. Now, I think it's interesting to note, and very few people are aware of this, but in the lead up to the administration's push for gays in the military, the Department of Defense enacted new guidelines for the prosecution of cases involving homosexual crimes in the military. And basically what they did is they stripped company commanders of their traditional authority over military justice. They moved it up to a higher level to where you'd have more political sensitivity to these issues.
Let's cut you off there, Colonel Black. Let me pick that up after the break. We're talking to Colonel Dick Black with his Americans for Truth Hour. We'll be right back.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support. but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarber with Americans for Truth. Our website is AmericansForTruth.org. We're talking to Colonel Dick Black, who is a war hero, basically. He's a recipient of the Purple Heart. He flew 269 combat helicopter missions in Vietnam. And Colonel, you were also with the JAG Corps, and you've got just a wealth of experience dealing with this homosexuality issue, don't you?
Yes. I was a staff judge advocate on three occasions, and a staff judge advocate is roughly the military equivalent of the United States attorney. So I ran legal operations at a number of posts at Fort Leonard Wood, at Fort Ord, California, at Fort Lewis, Washington, and I was a prosecutor at Fort Hood, Texas. I was the lead prosecutor there, and eventually I was the chief of the criminal law division in the Pentagon at the time that President Clinton attempted to implement the program to integrate homosexuals into the military.
And you already described a situation when you were very young in the military. Talk about some of the cases you've seen, predations by homosexual soldiers, et cetera. What kind of cases did you prosecute?
Well, we had a very interesting case when I was at Fort Ord that involved the Defense Language Institute. That's the place where they train linguists to man the embassies and top secret assignments around the world. And there was an individual who had been accused of making homosexual advances to subordinates, who was very, very senior and had access to all of the information about the students coming through the Defense Language Institute, and had the means of knowing which were homosexual, which were not. And we did an investigation of this individual, and not for being homosexual, but for making homosexual advances to students there. And also, he was required to have top secret clearance, and he refused to get one. And finally, he resigned upon advice of counsel. He had a law firm in San Francisco that advised him. But here was an individual who had information that could crack into American security at embassies all around the world, and very, very untrustworthy individual. And that was just one of the instances. At the Pentagon, I used to see cases involving homosexual assaults on soldiers in the barracks, on children of service members who were on post, who were assaulted. And
you're talking about pederasty cases. These are assaults on what, teenage boys, or?
Yeah, typically they would be. We did a study while I was at the Pentagon, and we analyzed 102 court-martial cases involving homosexuals who had been prosecuted over a 4-year period, and we found that of those 102 cases, about 2/3 of the offenses occurred on post. 84% of them were forcible. And about they broke out. About half of them were soldier on soldier cases, and half of them were soldiers on children. We had 5% HIV positive among the individuals doing these things.
Now, give me an idea of when this was, Colonel.
This was around 1993. Congress was doing a very intensive investigation of all aspects of this in the lead up to what President Clinton hoped would be a great gaze in the military victory.
Wow. This is incredible. And I believe I saw an article recently where homosexual sexual assaults were on the increase recently.
Well, we're certainly emboldening them. And the new regulations that DOD announced just this year have made it much more difficult to prosecute these cases. And they have also made it much, much easier for politically motivated senior officers to hide these cases. Because I think the administration did not want a repeat of the situation in 93 where all of this criminal misconduct came to light. And so they've done everything that they can to suppress any voices of opposition in the lead up to congressional action.
That is so incredible. So give me a practical example of how this might work, the change that's happened. Let's say somebody learns of two men who are engaged in a sexual act, two soldiers.
Sure.
How does this new policy work?
Let's take an example of an individual whose roommate tells him, "I was forcibly sodomized last night," and the roommate, the victim, doesn't want to say anything about it, but. But the fellow who gets this information goes to his company commander. He says, "Sir, my roommate was forcibly sodomized last night." Now, first of all, under the old rules, the commander could immediately start an investigation. The authority to take the start the investigation has been removed from him, and it goes up to a very senior level where it can become very awkward now to even investigate. Now, if there is a decision made, okay, you can go ahead and investigate, even though I'm going to get a lot of flack for it, they're going to have to go back to that soldier, and because he was not personally the victim or didn't personally observe it, they're going to call him in, and they're going to make him swear under oath. They're not going to be able to just take the information and go and continue the investigation. So they have deliberately placed impediments in the path of the proper investigation and resolution of this case. Now, this you need to understand, there's all kinds of criminal activity that goes on. I mean, this is just the nature of human affairs. This is the only area where these special rules apply that create barriers to prosecution. So this will naturally embolden sexual predators in the military to go out now, because they'll know that, all right, particularly if you have if you've got a general officer who's a little bit sympathetic and perhaps has political ambitions, wants to get ahead, they can get away with a lot of things that they couldn't in the past.
Colonel, this is just unbelievable what's going on. Now, I know that, you've got at the highest level, you've got Secretary Gates, who's made it clear that this is not a matter of if the policy is going to be implemented. It's a matter of how. Now, right there, they don't have authority. The law is the law. So we're talking about breaking the law here for President Obama's agenda as if the law has been changed and it hasn't been changed.
Well, without speaking about any particular individual, I am deeply concerned about the administration's approach on the repeal of 10 U.S. Code Section 654, which is the congressional law. It is the law of the land that bans homosexuals from serving. And I think Americans, whatever they believe about this issue, should be very deeply troubled when anyone from the administration goes before a congressional committee and declares that the law of the land will end, and that it's not a matter of if it's going to end, it's a matter of when it's going to end. That's a scary prospect in a nation that has a constitutional form of government with the separation of powers, because it somehow implies that that separation of powers no longer applies, and that if the executive feels that they want something to change, they're simply going to change it, and the legislature better get out of the way. That's scary from a whole different level, because it suggests an erosion of the constitutional separation of powers.
Yeah, and you're a Republican, Colonel. Where are the Republicans yelling and screaming about this abuse of power?
Well, you know, the Republicans have been on the defensive. I think, you know, the Republicans made their share of mistakes when they were in power. I think one of the great disappointments for social conservatives is that when George Bush took office, he didn't do away with all these gay pride days within the executive branch and things like that. You know, to the Democrats, he came across as some sort of a social warrior, but he was pretty laid back about this stuff.
Yes, he was laid back about the issue of homosexuality. He didn't really have the heart to take it on. He really gave a weak effort on behalf of a federal marriage amendment. But hopefully there will be a new day. I'm Pete LaBarbera interviewing Colonel Dick Black. We'll be back in a minute talking with, this is the Americans for Truth Hour. Our website is americansfortruth.org. Back to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Peter LaBarbera, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. We're interviewing Colonel Dick Black, who is a war hero. He flew 269 combat helicopter missions in Vietnam. He's been there. He's seen war up front, the brutality of it. And he's also been on the other end of it, behind a desk as a major in the Army JAG Corps. He has prosecuted crimes in the military. And, Colonel, you have a unique view on this whole homosexuality in the military equation. Could you talk about this review that Defense Secretary Gates is doing at the behest of President Obama? It is a review of the transition, as it were, to homosexuality in the military, even though the law has not been changed. They are presuming they've said that this is not a matter of if. You know, we're not going to evaluate this to see if the law should be changed. We're evaluating how it's going to be changed. Can you talk about how this review works?
Well, the review is sort of a fig leaf that they have. It's supposed to be completed by sometime, I think, in December. And basically, it's directed at how we will implement this. What are the steps we'll need to take? Keep in mind, the people behind this in the Pentagon are intensely pro-homosexual. So they're going to have to deal with issues of what do you do when you have a transgendered soldier? And do you give him the choice of wearing a dress or wearing fatigues? Do you allow him to not serve in combat because he is a woman and there's a ban on women in combat, or do you require him to serve in combat because he's really genetically a man? You have issues regarding the very tight supply of on-base housing. Do you kick off genuine families in order to put up a couple of guys who are shacking together and engaging in sodomy. How do you prove whether somebody is a homosexual for some of these purposes? Is there a requirement for them somehow to prove that they're participating in sodomy? Or
Colonel, under the proposed law changes, would the sodomy provision in the Universal Code of Military Justice, do I have that right? Would that be just taken out?
Article 125 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice makes it a felony to engage in sodomy. The act can be traced all the way back to George Washington, who drummed homosexuals out of the military with the Continental Army. That article must be changed, so Congress must vote to repeal or amend the article that prohibits sodomy so that they can then permit sodomy and authorize sodomy within the ranks.
Now, when you say permit sodomy, are you talking about just as they permit some normal couples, married couples, they permit them to, in some situations, to room together? Is that true currently?
Well, married couples, you know, they have married housing.
They have married housing. So we're talking about domestic partner housing. We're talking about homosexual housing, and they'd have to change that to permit that.
Well, what they would inevitably end up doing is pushing some families with children off of the post, so that you could have a couple of fellows who were engaging in sodomy, displace them and take their place. So these issues with, okay, what does this mean? Do we have to build additional housing units to accommodate these homosexual partnerships, or just how do we handle it? How do we handle homosexuals on the battlefield? Do we give them a quick HIV test before they're deployed to make sure that they don't infect other service members when there are battlefield injuries?
You might need an infusion of blood.
Well, you sure could. When I was wounded, the fellow in front of me had been hit by shrapnel in the neck, and blood was spurting from his neck. I went up and I plugged the hole with my thumb. I said, "Mike, I said, you're okay. I said, you got a small shrapnel hole in your neck. Give me your hand, and I'm gonna put your thumb over it." And he, you know, his hand came up shaking, and I put it over his neck. And you know, we got him back to care. You are covered with blood. You are covered with blood in battle, and you don't have a chance. You can't put on some silly little rubber gloves and that kind of thing. So you have all of these issues. Most of them will be buried by this study. Believe me, this is not a study designed to objectively assess what's going on. It's a study designed to implement a political agenda.
Well, and then that tells me that, let's say there's a change, and it looks like there is going to be a sweeping change in November. It is incumbent upon people who are concerned, congressmen who are concerned about this policy, to hold the administration accountable, to speak up against what the study actually should be, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely is. And I tell you, many Americans have hoped and prayed that Democrats would come on board and say, "Hey, look, we're with you. We're not for sodomy in the military," but very few of them are. Here in Virginia, I've petitioned my own senators to no avail. They are not willing to help us out, and where are they? There simply are no Democrats. I think down in Arkansas, there are two Democratic senators who voted against cloture, and they were the only ones. And that's because, you know, Senator Lincoln is at grave risk.
Right.
It doesn't look like she'll be reelected.
What happened to Jim Webb in Virginia, Senator Webb?
He was not with us.
And I thought he was counted on to vote. Didn't he say? I thought Senator Webb said that he would at least wait for the review that's coming out in December. But so much for that. He voted with the Democrats who lost. They needed 60 votes. They did not get it. And I do think Senator McCain deserves our thanks for that vote, don't you?
He really does. I've had my differences with Senator McCain, but I've got to say, I'm not sure that we could have pulled this off without him. I don't think we could have.
And that is a momentous victory because this policy, we haven't even gotten into, we're going to do another interview with Colonel Black next week because there's just too much to discuss here. Colonel, we haven't even talked about the diversity awareness propaganda that would sweep over the men and women in uniform. If this policy became implemented, the armed forces would become a gay propaganda zone.
It would be tremendous. People would be indoctrinated. They'd be instilled with fear of reporting misconduct. It would just have a disastrous impact on discipline. That's why 1,160 generals and admirals have petitioned to retain the existing policy. And on the other hand, you have a small handful of politically motivated generals led by Lady Gaga, who
right.
have been on the other side.
Right, and Lady Gaga lost this one, thank God. We're talking to Colonel Black. We'll be talking to him next week. The Colonel is a war hero. He's also running for state senate in Virginia. Go to AmericansForTruth.org and take action. Thanks, Senator McCain.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war, people who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.